cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine, host of the Inside Scoop, former congressional attorney, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. And today, as you can hear by that special music, is Tuesday, and that means here on the Inside Scoop, it's Election Tuesday, where we talk about what's going to happen every Tuesday from now until that special first Tuesday in November, November 2nd, when hopefully we do what the song says and kick out the Republicans. I want to thank Donnie Daly of Los Angeles for that music. And today we've got special guests from both the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee. We've got the press secretary of the Democratic National Committee, Tony Welch. He's going to come on the air and talk to me and answer your questions about what the Kerry campaign is doing, what they should do, answer questions about who John Kerry is and what he will do when, hopefully on November 2nd, he becomes President of the United States. And then we've got later on in the hour Scott Hoganson. He does radio communications for the Republican National Committee, and I'll be sparring with him regarding what Bush has done or hasn't done and what he'll do if he is elected. I don't say re-elected, of course, because we all know he wasn't elected in the first place. But, hey, it's a great time for you to ask them questions, to take your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number, 877-577-2667, 877-57-SCOOP. Call in, let me know what you think. What do you think about Kerry and Bush? And ask questions. Ask questions of Tony Welch. Ask questions of Scott Hoganson. I'll tell you, a lot's gone on because we have the Woodward book coming out, Bob Woodward, Plan of Attack. And the book basically confirms the same things that were in the two prior tell-all books, Richard Clark's book, the former counterterrorism czar, and also Paul O'Neill's book, former Treasury Secretary. Both of them talked about a president being obsessed with Iraq, and specifically about Dick Cheney, vice president, making all the decisions, deciding that he very much wanted to go to war with Iraq and basically pushing it and pushing it. There's all kinds of interesting things we find out in the book, and I'm going to ask some of them of our guests today. One of them, of course, that's just come out is that President Bush and Vice President Cheney informed Saudi leader Prince Bandar of our war with Iraq before they even told Secretary of State Colin Powell. Talk about being out of the loop. And Powell was out of the loop because he was largely complaining about Dick Cheney. Interestingly, the complaints that Secretary of State Powell was making very much confirm what I said on the air last year, that Dick Cheney, Vice President Cheney, was the guy behind the cherry-picking of intelligence. This is Mr. Cherry-Picker, and he's the guy that is basically going in and for example, let's read from the book. Nearly every conversation, Powell said, with Powell, that he had with Cheney, even every conversation or reference came back to Al-Qaeda and trying to nail the connection with Iraq. Cheney would often have an obscure piece of intelligence. Powell thought that Cheney took intelligence and converted uncertainty and ambiguity into fact. For example, when Cheney's people gave Powell the speech to read before the United Nations, he mentioned four meetings between September 11th pilot Mohammed Atta with an Iraqi intelligence officer in Prague. Of course, there were some problems with that. We happen to know that Mohammed Atta was in the United States at the time, and in fact, the Czechs had backed off the assertion, and in fact, we now know that it was basically one Czechoslovakian officer who saw a guy that looked like Mohammed Atta. That was it, but Cheney was pushing it hard and pushing Powell to say it before the United Nations. Powell threw it out. Again, this is from the book. Cheney would take an intercept and say it shows something was happening. No, 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 Powell or another would say. It shows that somebody talked to somebody else who said something might be happening. A conversation would suggest something might be happening, and Cheney would convert that into a "we know." Well, Powell concluded, we didn't know. No one knew. So really, this is a terrific book because it confirms a lot of, frankly, what I've reported, what others have reported, what I reported last year and what we have from Paul O'Neill, from Dick Clark. It all comes to be the same. And this time, the administration can't pick on Bob Woodward the way they tried to trash Paul O'Neill, the way they tried to trash Richard Clark, because President Bush himself sat down to be interviewed by Woodward, gave him a detailed interview, and in fact is refusing now to release transcripts of that interview. So it's kind of hard to blame Woodward when the president admits it. There's of course a lot more that's been talked about. We know, in addition to telling Saudi Prince Bandar about the war before Cheney, we know that there's also been discussions with Prince Bandar urging Saudi Arabia to manipulate the price of oil. Saudi Arabia promised that just before the election, Saudi Arabia would lower the price of oil in America. And of course, what that would do is it would help Bush, help the economy and help Bush in his election campaign. Interestingly, the White House has not denied this rumor. Prince Bandar has, but once Woodward backed it up and said, hey, you know, I can show documents, now the White House, McClellan gives a wonderful non-answer saying that, oh, well, of course, there are discussions with foreign leaders all the time. It's really quite manipulative, and it's striking to me that for a president that complained about John Kerry saying that, hey, he's going to have good relations with foreign leaders, and that foreign leaders, want Kerry to be president, something that really I don't think anyone can possibly dispute, that here's Bush, and his only foreign leaders that he really has close to is the same country, Saudi Arabia, that gave the Bush family more than $1.4 billion over 30 years. By the way, if you don't know that or you don't believe that, you got to check out my show last Monday, a week ago Monday. It's on the archives on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. That takes you to White Rose, and listen to that show, the show from Monday, April 12th. Craig Unger wrote House of Bush, House of Saud, and my interview with him was fascinating, talking about all the ties between Saudi Arabia and various Bush companies and Bush officials. They have been close for a long time. There's only one problem with that, and that is that Saudi Arabia, more than any single country with the exception of Afghanistan, was behind 9/11. Not only were 15 of the 19 hijackers Saudi, but we know that there are 28 pages of classified intelligence that talk about the Saudi relationship with al-Qaeda, including monetary relationship and all kinds of aid. And that won't be released. Instead, as I said, Cheney was looking for anything to talk about Iraq. So it's going to be a very interesting discussion with my guests. I'm going to raise the questions in the Woodward book, gas manipulation, the conflicts between Cheney and Bandar, and basic questions, important questions, like why does Bush insist that Dick Cheney have to be with him on the 9/11 commission? And what about jobs? What about domestic policy? Are we getting too caught up in foreign policy here? You know, why is it that real family median income is down so low? And, you know, what is Kerry going to do about jobs? What is Bush going to do about jobs? These are important questions. Health care. And frankly, we want to answer your questions, whatever they may be, about the Kerry or Bush campaigns, about their policies. This is your chance to call in. So coming back after commercial, we're going to have Tony Welch, the press secretary for the Democratic National Committee, and you'll have a chance to call in and ask him your questions. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. It's all there, if you forget, on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. And we'll be back here on Election Tuesday with the DNC and the RNC right after these messages. Don't go away.
Weapons of mass destruction.
If Alan Greenspan was a medical doctor, he'd be considered a dangerous quack, and his license to practice would have been yanked long ago. Instead, he's an economist, the unelected head of America's monetary system, and his quackery is not only tolerated but lauded by the powers that be, who've been using him to bilk the middle class. Greenspan's trail of quackery begins back in 1983. When he chaired a commission that persuaded Congress to raise the Social Security taxes of working folks. This radical surgery was necessary, Alan said, to create a surplus to assure that future retirees would get the benefits they're due. Quack. But instead of locking these surpluses away for future retirees, Greenspan left them open to raids by any president needing a quick pile of cash for a pet political project. The latest to make the raid is George W., who dove headfirst into our Social Security surplus to pull out the billions he needed to pay for his tax giveaways to the rich. Greenspan himself told Congress that such tax cuts were necessary to, believe it or not, prevent the buildup of government surpluses. Even though the bulk of the tax giveaways went to the richest people, Greenspan promised that this would not harm working families counting on their Social Security benefits for their retirement. Quack, quack. Just recently, the quack was back, urgently telling Congress that because of out-of-control budget deficits, Congress must now slash Social Security payouts as soon as possible. He urged that every retiree's benefits be cut and that the retirement age be raised. Quack, quack, quack. In his 20 years of practicing economic voodoo, here's what the mad doctor has achieved. Working people had their Social Security taxes raised so rich people could have their income taxes slashed, which he now says means that working people must have their Social Security payments cut. This is Jim Hightower saying, this quack has done enough harm. It's time to yank his license.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
$500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, bringing you Election Tuesday every Tuesday from now until that most important Tuesday on November 2nd. We focus on all things election, what's going on in the Kerry campaign, the Bush campaigns, what are their positions on the issues, how do they respond to the latest news. And, of course, that song is Donnie Daly's Kick Out the Republicans, a special for Election Tuesdays. We're going to begin with a very special guest. His name is Tony Welch. He's the press secretary of the Democratic National Committee. Tony, I want to thank you very much for coming on my program.
Mark, good to be with you. Everything you said is true except for the very special part, but thanks for having me on anyway.
Well, I think it's very special. Let me ask you a question. I want to go right to the news at hand, and also
sure.
I want to give listeners a chance to call in. The number's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can call toll-free. Hey, Tony, I want to ask about the Woodward book. There's a number of interesting things that came out of that book, but one of them that I thought was interesting was the connection between George Bush and Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia, where basically it seems in the book that Bandar had said that he would manipulate gas prices to lower the price of gas right before the election. And my question to you is, given that Kerry has talked about his connections with foreign leaders in the sense that I don't think anyone would deny that most foreign leaders, particularly in Europe, would prefer to see Kerry elected since he seems to care more about the opinion of the rest of the world. What is wrong with the president talking with Bandar about lowering oil prices?
Well, it has everything to do with the context of that, and I'd go so far as to point out, remember what Kerry exactly said, which was that leaders had come up to him to say, you know, we support you and so on. However, where George Bush is concerned, and I think what's most troubling for Americans, is if the book is true, if it's true that the president has been working with the Saudi government, a foreign government, to artificially, one, raise your gas prices artificially high, you know, get them way up there, and then just before the election, increase oil production so the price of the price it takes you to fill your car with gas drops down dramatically so Bush gets all the credit. Well, that's working with a foreign government to manipulate a United States election.
One of the things
I think that's the troublesome part.
One of the things I also found interesting in the book is it says that Prince Bandar apparently knew about our decision to go to war before even Secretary of State Colin Powell, which is really being out of the loop. Go ahead.
Well, that has raised quite a fuss here in Washington, because and Bob Woodward is not mincing words here, but he makes the point very clearly that the prince was one of the first people in this country to know, apparently, that George W. Bush had planned, made the decision to go to war with Iraq, and he does not paint it as. He does not paint it lightly. He does not paint it as the president considering going to war. He paints it very clearly as the president having made the decision, having come to the conclusion, having ordered the war plans that we were definitely going to go to war in Iraq long before the American people knew. But apparently there is Prince Bandar, a close family friend of the Bushes, who's on the inside loop. So much on the inside. Forget the regular American citizens. Our own Secretary of State was kept out of the loop, and apparently others within the administration.
And again, I want to remind people of really the Saudi Arabia is not like England. It's not a democracy. And indeed, as I've repeated often on the air here, because people often forget, it's not just that 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers were Saudis, but that there's 28 pages which Bush refuses to release in classified information from the intelligence committees that detail line by line the ties between the highest levels of the Saudi government and 9/11, monetary ties, including even hijackers in 9/11, people in Al-Qaeda that were captured in Afghanistan, saying that they had connections with Saudi officials. So I think
we have your details.
What's that?
I said, you know your details.
Well, that's what I try to do here on the Inside Scoop. I try to give people the details. And in fact, I had Craig Unger, author, here last week talking about this. I also want to ask you about the $700 million that apparently was supposed to be used for Afghanistan but was switched over to Iraq. That's also in the book.
Well, before we leave the last topic, something I want to point out there.
Sure.
And that is that Woodward was asked about the president saying during an interview. He was talking to a reporter, and he says, you know, there are no war plans on my desk. And it appears to contradict what Woodward writes in his book, which is that the president had drawn up war plans, he'd asked for war plans, and had made the decision to go to war.
Maybe they just weren't on his desk, Tony.
And that was exactly the point Woodward made. He says, you know what, if you've been to the president, if you've seen the president's desk.
Right, it's pretty clean, huh?
There's nothing on it. He keeps Absolutely. And Woodward made the point of saying, technically, that's true.
It all depends on what the definition of desk is.
Exactly. But he was absolutely sticking to his well-reported story. I don't think anyone questions the credibility of Bob Woodward, although more and more are questioning the credibility of this president. And why would that be? It's because it has a little bit to do now, of course, with the president diverting $700 million from the war on terror in Afghanistan and putting it toward Iraq. And the reason that has folks here in Washington upset, and you know this as well as I do, the Constitution prohibits the president from doing that.
Yeah.
Because he does not get to appropriate the money any way he sees fit, especially with especially for an undeclared war. And I think you're going to see them bend and bend and bend the rules to justify their actions. But most Americans are probably scratching their head wondering, look, Mr. President, you said it was going to be the weapons of mass destruction. That's the reason we went into war. But clearly they held a grudge that they were going to see through. And there's something else I'll say to you, Mark, and I know,
yeah.
you'll agree with this. If you consider Paul O'Neill's book, Dick Clark's book, you know, and the folks from the administration, and now the Woodward's book and others who've come along to say this president was intent on going to war in Iraq from his first day in office. And every single time the Bush administration has to fight back to try to discredit the person, you know, who's written the latest book. But at some point, don't you have to ask yourself, did everybody else get it wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that
left-wing conspiracy.
You know, Woodward, they've discredited. They tried to, you know, blame everything but the kitchen sink on Richard Clark and Paul O'Neill, both, of course, moderate Republicans, which is interesting. But now they have Bob Woodward giving personal interviews, you know, with the president, and it's kind of hard for them to back down. Here's my question, though, like the $700 million. Now that's quite a serious thing, as you point out. The Congress appropriates, and the president is not allowed to spend outside of that. I remember back in the Reagan era, the Iran-Contra affair, one of the major problems was the president, or maybe it wasn't the president, but at least we know that the administration, the Reagan administration, certainly Oliver North and Admiral Poindexter, were taking money meant for one thing and using it for another. And that was so serious that they said that if Reagan knew, it could even be grounds for impeachment.
Right.
My question is this, and I think I speak for many Democrats that listen to my show and listen to Radio Power. I do have some conservative listeners. I welcome you folks as well. But it's mostly Democrats. My concern, and I hear it all the time, is that the Democrats aren't tough enough. That Bill Clinton, he knew how to play rough, to play dirty, even fair, but in other words, give it to them. And this $700 million, will Kerry mention this? Will he explain it to the American people? Or is he going to let others do the work for him? Because I think this is an important thing that might get lost if we don't repeat it enough.
I don't think there's a doubt that John Kerry is going to mention those issues. I'll say a couple things about that, because I think part of that's true.
I don't think they play as rough as they do.
Whether or not Democrats are tough enough and aggressive enough. I think with the campaign, with Howard Dean striking a chord throughout this country to finally help Democrats find their voice, I don't think we can give him nearly enough credit for doing that. But I'll say this. On the day after the revelations of the book hit, so this would be yesterday, Monday, after the 60 Minutes appearance by Bob Woodward, you have John Kerry out there hitting hard and strong on the Vince Vandar issue and the gas price issue. On the $700 million, I think that issue is so serious.
It's very serious. We're not going to get impeachment hearings, right? I mean, we don't control Congress,
That's the thing. While you don't control Congress, in part, and I've heard impeachment since the summer from some wonderful Democrats out there, and it's not exactly the easiest thing in the world to say, look, Our focus now, we don't control the Congress. Our focus now has to be on removing this president from office through an election.
Right, absolutely.
Because if you go ahead, you fight the impeachment fight and lose that and waste your resources in that direction,
yeah,
you know, and lose some supporters along the way, it doesn't mean that somebody's position, if it's yours, isn't a valid position. But it does mean, look, what's our ultimate goal here?
I agree with you, Tony. The goal is to defeat him in the election. It's the only really possible way to get him out of office. And I just hope that Kerry will talk and explain to Americans you can't take money that was supposed to be spent in Afghanistan and spend it on Iraq. I want to ask you also about United Nations, and then I promise I've got to get to domestic policy because we can't do foreign policy the entire time.
Oh, well, okay.
But in terms of the United Nations, Kerry has said from the outset that we need to get more other countries involved. We need to get the United Nations involved. And Bush has resisted that. It's even clear in Woodward's book that Cheney very much resisted it. Powell was about the only one that wanted to do it, and he was sort of overruled. And, of course, the United Nations said there's no justification for the war, and we went anyway. And now it appears that Bush is coming around to Kerry's view,
right,
and starting to involve the United Nations, which I guess we have to applaud.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's so many ideas that Democrats have, whether it's the Department of Homeland Security, whether it's the $300 person tax cut that came from
right,
a true socialist, Bernie Sanders, our only socialist in Congress. There are all these ideas that Democrats have that Bush fights and fights and fights. The 9/11 Commission, great example. He fights and fights, and then he's forced to accept it, and then he turns around and co-opts it, claims it for his own.
Right.
How can the Democrats make clear? I mean, I hope, are we going to show old clips of him, you know, refusing these things? How do we make clear that, you know, thank you, Mr. President, for starting to adopt some of John Kerry's ideas?
Well, Mark, I think, because I get the same worries that you have sometimes, and then I remember folks are a lot of, folks I think are a lot smarter than Karl Rove and George W. Bush, give him credit for being.
Well, I worry about that, because those of us in the Beltway, we watch these things. But, you know, I don't know if out there, outside the Beltway, people are watching so closely.
He is. You're right. He is trying to take credit for the homeland security. Good Lord, look what they did down in Georgia, where they went at Max Cleland, and he was one of the original sponsors
right,
of it.
Right.
Of homeland security, and they attacked him on the thing he had sponsored. You know what's interesting? And this ties in with not only with homeland security and other things that they've tried to co-opt, but it also ties in with the Prince Bandar story, with the idea that the president would inflict harm upon American families by them paying higher gas prices throughout this summer, only to, you know, reap the rewards of lower gas prices. And ultimately, it's something that we Democrats know. We haven't seen the worst of it. They are going to do anything to hold on to power.
Oh, I know they did anything to get power in the first place.
But when you watch what Woodward's book is showing us is, while the American people were being told diplomacy, that's our first choice, the president had already made the decision to go to war. Now, even for people who are in favor of the war with Iraq, I don't think I can find one of them who's willing to say they're in favor of the President of the United States misleading the American people.
Right, or Vice President Cheney, for that matter, who talked about a nuclear attack on the United States, which was widely, it was just wrong, it was false,
well, and
more than exaggerated.
You know this, Mark, what's coming out most recently from the book, I mean, the Post has been doing excerpts all week long, but most recently they talk more and more about Cheney's role.
Right.
And that would be Cheney's leadership role in pressing the war. And a president, and again, here's where Dick Clark's book gets more credence as we go along, and that has to do with more details emerging that you had a president who was not engaged. He knew he wanted to go to war, but as far as the details went, and as far as the plan went, you know, you have, apparently, he had folks stunned all around him.
You know, I've talked repeatedly on this program about Cheney manipulating President Bush. Of course, as I've said on this program before, it's scary because Cheney could have a heart attack and die, and then actually Bush becomes president. Then he starts running the country instead of Cheney. And, you know, Cheney may be evil, but at least he's a smart man. And so I'm concerned, and I want to know what you think. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Don't miss your chance to call in and talk with Tony Welch. You can bring up anything you want about the election. Hey, and if you're a Republican, you want to call in and harass us, that's your right. This is a free country. Please do so. 877-57-SCOOP. I'm sure you are. I do want to move on, though, and talk about domestic issues.
Sure.
Because one of my concerns, I mean, we have real family median income, for example, is down. And people are actually, it's not just unemployment. People are earning less
year
by year under the Bush administration, which is basically, as frankly John Edwards, I thought, put it very well in the campaign, is basically taking has used the tax system to reward those who live off their wealth instead of those that work for a living. And one of my concerns is with all the foreign policy, and after all, I opened this discussion with foreign policy,
okay,
so I'm as guilty as anyone, but with Woodward and terrorism and Iraq and our horrible war there, I'm afraid that some of the domestic issues are going to get lost. What is the Democratic Party or John Kerry going to do to, after all, bread and butter issues, these are often the primary concern of Americans, to put that back on the agenda?
Well, I like that question, because it gives me an opportunity to point out that we're 6 months from Election Day.
That's true.
That the election is going to be held tomorrow. And until the beginning of this month, as a matter of fact, jobs was registered as the number one issue among Americans, and still might. But what we're seeing is with things turning worse and worse in Iraq, there is a lot of attention. And, of course, it should, probably should be that way, frankly, Mark. We've had more Americans die in American soldiers die in Iraq this month than in any other month of the war.
Yeah, 99 dead and 600 wounded, and April's not even over yet.
Well, it's incredible. It really is. And so I think now you've seen, one, the administration begin a scramble. The news that Spain and Honduras are pulling out isn't good news, and John Kerry supports, desperately wants them to stand there and understands we need to build a stronger coalition. But he understands that reaching out, and this is where George Bush has actually done an about-face. Kerry understands that reaching out to build a stronger international coalition in Iraq can be done at the same time pursuing an aggressive war on terror in the rest of the world. That those things are not mutually exclusive. And to George W. Bush, with a bunch of their rhetoric, it has been.
Well, let me ask you, you know, I can't just give you softball questions, Tony. I got to ask you some hard ones here.
Tough as you want.
And, you know, you got to be ready because Republicans are going to ask this. I hear, you know, Robert Novak and other evil commentators, you know, go on all the time about, well, you know, okay, fine. Maybe Bush has no idea what's going to happen on June 30th. We're transferring sovereignty to Iraq. We don't know who. Okay, fine. But, you know, he doesn't quite concede it. But the implicit in the point is, all right, Bush is a loser. But Kerry has to have a plan as well. He's got no plan, you know, so therefore they're even. And I'm concerned by recent polls that show, unbelievably to me, someone who's worked on Homeland Security, that some 62% of Americans still trust Bush over Kerry on issues of terrorism. So let me deal with those questions one at a time. First of all, what is Kerry's plan on Iraq? And then I'll get to the question of terrorism.
Well, he has pointed out that the major problem there is that there's a target on the backs of American soldiers, almost exclusively, and that we've not been honest brokers with the rest of the world. As you know as well as I do, we're not talking about just credibility here at home. We're talking about the president's credibility and America's credibility throughout the world. And I think Kerry can make a very, very sincere appeal that while we are there and we have to finish the job, there is a new administration. There's a new way of thinking, and that, you know, what he has that Bush simply won't be able to muster is absolute sincerity when asking for the help, that they feel like
right.
They're dealing with an honest broker.
Well, but
and there it begins in building the international coalition. Okay. There's no other way to say it except that we know that John Kerry is committed to doing that, and George W. Bush has to reverse course.
Tony, that makes sense to me, but let me get specific here, and I don't even know if you know the answer, but on June 30th, we're transferring sovereignty to someone. I don't know who. Bush doesn't know who. In his press conference, he didn't know who. But
that was one of the most disturbing answers.
But we're gonna find out soon. It's gonna be like after the commercial break. You will find out who will own Iraq. So I got to ask the question of Kerry. Kerry has said, and I think rightly, that once we say we're going to be out June 30th, we should continue with that. Rightly or wrongly, once you do that, you're kind of stuck with it. Who would Kerry turn over power to on June 30th?
Well, you know, and here's the only thing I'll say, and then you're fine to ask any question, obviously. The only thing I'll say that's unfair about that question is we have to stick to it now. But I can tell you that John Kerry would have been, and he would not have been stubbornly ignoring the U.N., for this long,
right.
Would have been working very hard
right.
up to this point. But you're right; it's still a somewhat a fair question. But you know, he's got to live with the parameters that George Bush put on this,
right.
which was to be so reluctant in talking to the international community, to be so arrogant with pursuing the policy. It simply could not be this way, and then to set an arbitrary date that you cannot back down from. All of those mistakes, which the president apparently alluded to. President when he was asked what mistakes he'd made during...
Right, he couldn't think of any. He's never made a mistake.
But you know,
Cheney
so
wasn't
well,
by his
yeah,
side,
so
telling him.
The question's kind of like, well, now that I've screwed this up so horribly, what would you do if you... Hold on a second. You got to go through and you got to do the hard work. And if you're given 30 days to develop the authority to transfer power over to, it's got to happen that way. Everyone agrees. But, you know, and after so many hypotheticals, it becomes virtually impossible. But, you know... I think if as strong a coalition that the stronger coalition, security coalition that can be developed there, I think that's roughly where Kerry stands. It is a difficult question to answer, no doubt about it. But you don't set the date and then try to figure out who to give the keys to.
That's backwards. Last question. One of my concerns, in fact, one of the reasons I'm on the radio, as my longtime listeners know, is that when I was working in the committee, the congressional committee that oversaw mm-hmm. Homeland Security,
yes.
I would see all kinds of things that were not being done, whether it's protecting our police and firefighters,
sure.
to protecting our chemical plants, to protecting our nuclear plants, to even buying up loose nukes in the former Soviet Union. The Democrats had all kinds of plans to do this, and Bush threatened to veto them. I mean, if you're talking about $4 billion to buy up loose nukes in the Soviet Union, how can anyone be against that? I didn't understand. This is an issue that I have not seen get any press. In fact, that's the reason I came on the radio, was to give this issue some press. Do you think that Kerry and the Democrats can focus on the defects in our homeland security? I'm not just saying, really for political reasons, but because, you know, damn it, we need to be safe here in America.
That's what we need to do to be safer.
And I just hope our ports
and our borders.
Our ports, our cargo, our the fact that you can go on an airplane and they make you take off your shoes, but they still put packages underneath that they don't check.
Right.
I just want to encourage you and the Democrats and John Kerry to really focus on that. Even if, you know, I mean, if Bush listens and changes his mind, then great. At least we're all safer.
Well, I think I couldn't agree with you more. But the gaps are so apparent and very scary. But I can tell you that there is no doubt that John Kerry understands what is central for making this country safer, and that he's going to pursue it with all that he has. But I think the most important thing is,
yep.
as this administration goes along, with when there's a deficiency and they can't admit the mistake, and instead that's when you get the exaggerations, we were better than we actually were, we were more prepared than we actually were,
right.
or you get the out and out lies that we've
right.
done, that we're doing something when we're doing something else. And I think the most important thing John Kerry can give this nation is restore honesty and integrity to the White House.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I want to thank you. That's the first half hour goes quickly. I want to thank you very much for appearing on my show. Coming up, folks, we've got Scott Hoganson of the Republican National Committee, and I don't expect him to agree with me quite as much as Tony Welch did, and I think you'll find a very interesting debate coming up in the next half hour. Thanks again, Tony, for your showing up. If you want to join in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Got some difficult questions that you think it's hard for a Republican to answer? Here's your chance. We're going to have him on the hot seat, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Back with more of Election Tuesday right after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
In preparation for its expansion into Chicago, Walmart is modifying its strategy to win community support for Supercenter stores. On one hand, the company is launching a major public relations offensive to tout its benefits to consumers in the city. And on the other, it's meeting with representatives from the Chicago Federation of Labor and the local of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union about corporate responsibility. Union and community groups want commitments from Walmart that its workers in Chicago will be paid a living wage and have access to affordable health benefits, although unionizing Chicago Walmart stores is not on the table. Even so, it's believed to be the first time the company has approached union groups about its expansion.
80 food service workers at SUNY Purchase University are continuing their struggle to join the Civil Service Employees Association, AFSCME Local 1000. They're hoping a union will end the harassment, low wages, and poor benefits imposed by their employer, Chartwell's Dining Services. Union organizer John Hartow describes the incident that was the last straw for the mostly immigrant workforce.
A woman who was hired as a dishwasher, who was 5 months pregnant, who was forced to unload boxes off of the back of a truck. When she complained that it was too strenuous for her because of her pregnancy, she was told that initially she was only going to be doing it for an hour, but they forced her to do it for the whole day. Subsequently, she miscarried.
Chartwell's is a subsidiary of the largest food provider in the world, London-based Compass Justice Group International. Over the past 5 years, there have been more than 63 unfair labor practice claims filed with the National Labor Relations Board against them. SUNY University administration officials are supporting Chartwell's anti-union campaign by calling in police to arrest student organizers and filing numerous academic disciplinary charges against them.
6 months ago, the government of Bolivia collapsed after days of general strikes and civil unrest sparked by plans to privatize and sell off the country's expansive natural gas resources. Now the Bolivian government's resurrected the sale idea, and the country's largest federation of trade unions has given leaders until May 3rd to change their mind or suffer another indefinite general strike. Bolivian President Carlos Mesa overhauled his cabinet last week in partial response to the controversy, but will not say whether another change of mind is in the offing. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The American Savings and Education Council's 14th Annual National Retirement Survey reports 58% of all working Americans save for retirement, but only 42% have actually done the math to try and figure out just how much money they'll need to live on, and the survey's trend suggests the rate at which they're saving for retirement is much too low. 45% of those polled have less than $25,000 in retirement savings.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Based on lies and corruption, where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, welcoming you to Election Tuesday, every Tuesday here on The Scoop. From now until that very important Tuesday on November 2nd, we are going to discuss what's going on with Kerry, with Bush. We have representatives today of the DNC and the RNC. You just heard Tony Welch, Press Secretary for the Democratic National Committee. And now I've got on the line, I've got Scott Hoganson. He works for the Republican National Committee. Hi, Scott. Welcome very much to the program. Thanks for coming. Scott, you there? Hello, Scott. I'm not sure what happened. Oh, there you are. Hello, Scott. How are you?
Hello, Mark.
Yes, can you not hear me? I guess not. That's kind of strange. I hear you.
I'm standing by, Mark. I'm just standing by for your cue.
Okay, all right. I don't know why he can't hear me, but we're going to figure that out in just a minute. Scott, can you hear me now?
Hello.
I guess not. That's kind of strange here. I don't know why you can't hear me. But we want to fix that problem. Let me go play a little bit of music, and then I'm going to get Scott Hoganson on the line in just about 30 seconds. Hang on. Scott, you couldn't...
But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. We've lost our guest, Scott Hoganson, which is a problem. I expect him to be calling back shortly. He is the radio communications guy for the Republican National Committee, and he's going to answer your questions and mine regarding the Bob Woodward book, regarding what Bush's plans to do, what Kerry plans to do. If you want to call in, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. Here's your chance to question a Republican, to put them on the hot seat. I believe that's Scott Hoganson right now. Scott, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now, Scott? I don't know why you can't hear me.
I'm trying to contact
yes.
Mark.
I don't know why you can't hear me, Scott. That's kind of strange. Yeah, I assume you can't hear me. Very strange. All right, we've had some technical problems here, folks. We're going to run to one commercial, and then I'm going to connect up with Scott Hoganson and give you a chance to give your call. So hang on. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
Greenspan's License to Practice, today on Hightower Radio. If Alan Greenspan was a medical doctor, he'd be considered a dangerous quack, and his license to practice would have been yanked long ago. Instead, he's an economist, the unelected head of America's monetary system, and his quackery is not only tolerated but lauded by the powers that be, who've been using him to bilk the middle class. Greenspan's trail of quackery begins back in 1983, when he chaired a commission that persuaded Congress to raise the Social Security taxes of working folks. This radical surgery was necessary, Alan said, to create a surplus to assure that future retirees would get the benefits they're due. Quack. But instead of locking these surpluses away for future retirees, Greenspan left them open to raids by any president needing a quick pile of cash for a pet political project. The latest to make the raid is George W., who dove headfirst into our Social Security surplus to pull out the billions he needed to pay for his tax giveaways to the rich. Greenspan himself told Congress that such tax cuts were necessary to, believe it or not, prevent the buildup of government surpluses. Even though the bulk of the tax giveaways went to the richest people, Greenspan promised that this would not harm working families counting on their Social Security benefits for their retirement. Quack, quack. Just recently, the quack was back, urgently telling Congress that because of out-of-control budget deficits, Congress must now slash Social Security payouts as soon as possible. He urged that every retiree's benefits be cut and that the retirement age be raised. Quack, quack, quack. In his 20 years of practicing economic voodoo, here's what the mad doctor has achieved. Working people had their Social Security taxes raised so rich people could have their income taxes slashed, which he now says means that working people must have their Social Security payments cut. This is Jim Hightower saying, this quack has done enough harm. It's time to yank his license.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop, taking your calls this Election Tuesday. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And we were talking earlier with Tony Welch, the Democrat National Committee press secretary. We're trying to reach Scott Hoganson, Republican National Committee. He's having some problems with his phone. I do hope that he'll call back in later. But we certainly have a lot to discuss. I'm going to go right to a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from? Caller, are you there? Well, we're having all kinds of problems today. Caller? I don't know why they can't hear me. Caller, are you there?
This is Bert from Minnesota.
Hello, Bert from Minnesota. Thank you very much for calling in.
Hey, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the Republican spin machine with regards to attacking people, even members of their own party, who get out of line. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, Paul O'Neill and Dick Clark, and I remember Senator Daschle just recently, he delivered a speech to Congress basically on that topic.
Right. Well, it's very interesting that, you know, anyone who disagrees with Bush is apparently unpatriotic and a terrorist and all kinds of things. I mean, Richard Clark had worked for, he was hired originally by Ronald Reagan, served under George Bush, did serve under Bill Clinton, and then served under George W. Bush. And suddenly, and the funny thing is that it's usually they send out their goonies, right? They send out people. I mean, Condoleezza Rice, when she testified before the 9/11 Commission, said very positive things about Richard Clark. But when she wasn't testifying, she and others were saying very negative things. What do you think? I mean, do you think that anyone believes this, Bert? I mean, do you think that they think that any of these negative attacks are true?
Well, whether they believe it or not, I mean, they've got a big microphone right in front of them, and people, their message gets out whether or not it's right or not. But, you know, I'm a scientist in my regular job, and I'm really into the idea of peer review. And I'm really into the idea of having your friends go over your ideas and say, hey, am I full of it here? And it seems like whatever comes down, you know, ex cathedra from Bush cannot be questioned. And, you know, so I just can't see this as being a good way of running the government.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they attack Secretary of State Colin Powell now, who's saying that, you know, he told President Bush, basically, if you go into Iraq, if you break it, you bought it, like the Pottery Barn, you know, you got to stick with it. Iraq's not going to be so easy. It'll be interesting if they attack Powell, too. I mean, there'll be no one left to attack.
Right. And I think that's something I really like to hear your caller, if you ever get the technical things sorted out. I'd really like him to speak to the idea of why it is that the Republicans seem to have this either completely with us, or you're against us and you're a terrorist and all this stuff.
Well, that's a great question, and I promise I'll ask it as soon as I get Scott Hogenson back on the air. Thanks very much for calling, Bert.
Thanks.
Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Rex from Alabama.
Rex from Alabama. What do you think about what we've been talking about?
Well, actually, I had you turned down, so that if I picked up, I wouldn't get any feedback.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank you for having your show. Until recently, I didn't even know there was liberal talk radio.
We exist, Rex. We exist.
I've just found that out.
We barely exist. I'll tell you, there's some more than 90% of talk radio in this country is right-wing or not political at all. It's actually very rare to have shows like mine on the air, and I appreciate your listening.
Well, I'm right in the middle of the Bible Belt, and you can imagine what it's like for me here in Alabama. There's not that many liberals around. Or rather, they are around, but they don't speak out.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I get a lot of people who call into my show from Texas, from Idaho. I got this one woman in Idaho that just loves the show. I get people from, Kansas, it's funny, it's interesting. It's like the people from the so-called red states, the Bush states, there are Democrats in these areas that never get heard. And so, Rex, it's like your only chance to get heard is calling into shows like mine. I appreciate that.
Well, I hope the Democratic Party can find a way to get to all those Democrats out there that have become apathetic and think that we can't win. See, that's kind of an attitude here in Alabama. The state votes Republican. And because of the Electoral College, all the votes go to the Republicans, so you kind of get the feeling like, well, my vote don't count.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do. I mean, I'm not saying I expect to win Alabama this fall. It'd be great if we would, but certainly members of Congress. I assume you've got some close elections down there in Alabama, or is it all gerrymandered?
They can be fairly close.
I mean, because that's something really where you can make a difference. You know, people forget how much power Congress has. If we had a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives, we could explore some of these questions about Bush. We could have Congress having investigations, just like they had all the time with Bill Clinton. If we had a Democratic majority, they could investigate the president. And all we need is just to elect more representatives. That's something you can do locally in Alabama, is work for, you know, help a Democratic congressional candidate.
Yeah, I would be glad to, and I would be glad to, as much as possible, get a few folks fired up about just getting out and voting.
You know, and Rex, hey, spread the word. I mean, you know, it really takes, it starts everywhere, and starts in Alabama. I'll tell you, I was talking with kids just the other day. I debate conservatives all the time, and before audiences of high school kids, about 200, and most of them were from Nebraska. And they had never heard the things I was saying. They'd never heard anyone criticize the president. Nebraska is a fairly Republican state. And they were, you know, standing up and cheering and clapping. And sometimes I think we do give up on some states that we shouldn't. Some of these more conservative states, you know, change happens. And it happens with people like you, Rex. And just letting people know, you know what, not only is it okay to criticize the president, it's your patriotic duty. I mean, he works for us, right? We're a democracy. And if you accept what the president says without thinking, then I think that's un-American. Because I think it's like we have any employee working for us. The president works for us. And if we've got to watch and make sure that he's doing the right thing. So,
believe it or not, I know a lot of right-wing conservatives where I live, and there's quite a number of them actually starting to come around now.
Really? What are they saying, Rex?
Well, like my own brother, for instance, he was a big Bush supporter. In fact, the only time I ever heard him use a cuss word in his entire life was when I voted for Clinton.
Okay.
That's something he shouldn't have said, but he's even saying now that he doesn't think he can vote for Bush.
Really? Is it because of Iraq? Is it because of the economy? Is it because of 9/11 or lies? What is it?
Well, Iraq was part of it, but mostly it's because of the economy.
Okay. Is he struggling with a job or low pay or things like
no,
that?
No, he makes perfectly good money. He just sees what's going on now.
Okay.
And plus, frankly, Bush does come across as a little bit stupid.
A little bit stupid and very arrogant.
Stupid.
You know, it's funny. I often call our president Prince George because he seems to me very much like, you know, in old England when the king dies and he leaves a son who's not old enough to be king yet. He's like 10 years old, but he is the king, you know, and so he gets to wear the crown and carry the scepter and say things like, bring it on, and, you know, have all this bravado, gets to dress up in the military army, but in the suit and flight suit and go on carriers and stuff. But everybody knows he's not really in charge. He just likes to play in charge. The real people in charge, of course, are his Vice President Dick Cheney and his political advisor Karl Rove. And so,
all the way back in the Republican primaries, that he just was not the one pulling the strings.
He really isn't, and he still isn't pulling the strings today. And the scary thing is, whatever you thought about Bill Clinton, the guy was in charge. I mean, he was running things. He was a very smart guy. You knew that whatever policy he had, it came from him. It wasn't a question of his advisors forcing something down his throat. I mean, you know, Bush is sort of, again, I think of like the 10-year-old kid. Like, I'm president, I get to do it my way. And so he doesn't understand the subtleties of governing, and he just sort of insists on doing it the same way. And this sort of inflexible, this arrogance where he's never made a mistake. He can't even name a mistake. He hadn't been prepped for that question. You know, he hadn't been told what to say. His advisors hadn't thought of that question. So he was just stuck. Like a deer in the headlights. Did you see the press conference, Rex?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. He just struck me like a deer in the headlights. I don't know what to say here. I don't know what to say. Help, Daddy, Uncle Dick, help. You know?
Yep. He needs somebody to speak up for him, doesn't he?
It's kind of sad. I remember Saturday Night Live before the 2000 election, and they had Will Ferrell playing George Bush. And first they had Daryl Hammond playing Al Gore, a very boring government, but it was all running smoothly. You know, computers were sort of running the government. And then they had Will Ferrell, and he's hiding under the desk, and there's fires seen outside the White House, and he sort of crawls out under the desk, Mr. President, he says, oh, I'm sorry, America, I don't know what I did. You know, and people laughed, but who would have predicted, you know, they never show that rerun of Saturday Night Live. Who would have predicted that we really would be at war, that war would actually come to our shores?
And probably not allowed to show it now.
You know, it would be very interesting because they showed it all the time before 2000, but I haven't seen it since. And it's really, it was just really the foresight of whoever wrote that, just being a comedy act. That was really wild. Hey, Rex, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate
that. Thank
you. All right, I'm going to try once again to get Scott Hogeson on the air. When we come back after the commercial, you'll have your chance to question a real live person in charge of the Republican National Committee. Ask him tough questions, folks. They need that. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back, hopefully with Scott Hogeson, but definitely with more of Election Tuesday right after these messages.
Because their intelligence was wrong, was the reason for war based on lies and corruption. Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Step right up, seniors, for it's time to play Medicare Gotcha. As you know, the drug companies have been ripping off us consumers, charging exorbitant prices in the U.S. for medicines they sell elsewhere for half or even a third as much. Because of public outrage over this gouging, Bush and his Congress had to look like they were doing something. So last year they rammed into law the Medicare Drug Discount Program for senior citizens. The program, which begins in June, is a bedazzling, convoluted, privatized shell game rigged with enough trickery to make a county fair flim-flammer blush. Start with the fact that rather than simply stopping the price gouging, as other countries have done, Bush's program subsidizes it, putting some $139 billion of our tax money into the pockets of the drug giants. Then there's the corporate hucksterism built into the new system. If you think phone company come-ons are confusing, wait till you try to compare the dizzying array of private drug discount plans that'll fill your mailbox. Pharmacy chains, drug companies, insurance peddlers, online firms, and others will try to lure you into taking their card. They'll all offer different enrollment fees, different discounts on their list of drugs, and different lists of drugs that they cover. Not only will each company have its own price list, but grab your wallet. Their prices can change weekly. Yes, this means that a company can hook you into taking its card by offering low prices on the medicines you use most often, then, gotcha, jack up its prices the next week. Well, you say, if they do that, I'll just switch companies. Gotcha again. Bush's law only lets you switch cards once a year.
This is Jim Hightower saying, getting the medicines you need ought not to be a game, much less a game rigged to enrich drug industry ripoff artists. It's time for a national health plan in America, based on people's needs, not on drug company profits.
Sometimes it takes an army to help one child. It's the Salvation Army, and it needs your help to send needy children to camp this summer. To donate, call 1-800-SALARMY or donate online at 1-800-SALARMY.org. This army can't help a single child without you.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
We've got to get out the vote and even the score. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't hit their heads on the door.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Election Tuesday. We've been talking with Tony Welch, DNC Press Secretary, and just talking about everything going on. We had some problems trying to get the Republican National Committee guy there. We'll have to get him on another day. I think people brought up a lot of good points. I think that we need to make clear that, the things that Woodward's saying and so forth, that these things get spread out. People know about them. Let me see just one last time if I can get Scott Hoganson on the line. Scott, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Hello, is this Mark?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me?
Hi, Mark.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, okay. I'll tell you, we don't have much time now, but at least you can get through, and that's a good thing. I do want to ask you one question that Bert from Minnesota asked when you weren't on the air. And his question was, why is it that whenever you have someone that criticizes the Bush administration, like Paul O'Neill or Richard Clark, or now we have some things coming out by Bob Woodward, the Republicans seem, according to Bert, and to go on the attack, to attack them personally rather than answer the charges of what they're saying.
Okay, and the question is?
Well, the question is, do you see it that way? And, do you think that, do you agree? I guess you don't agree with him, and tell me why not.
Agree with what?
Well, his view is that the Republicans aren't addressing the merits of what Richard Clark and Bob Woodward and Paul O'Neill are saying, but they're just attacking them personally.
No, it's not that at all. As a matter of fact, what happens with John Kerry and a lot of other left-wing Democrats is that anytime you say, no, you are factually incorrect and this is why, it is referred to by them as some sort of a personal attack. And it's gotten to the point now where one cannot even speak factually about a liberal Democrat's record without them trying to portray it as some sort of a scurrilous personal attack. And it's all in an effort to stifle any kind of meaningful debate.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, like, for example, it's not about Kerry's record. Talking about, say, Richard Clark, and instead of addressing the questions that he says about Bush not being prepared on 9/11, basically they're going out and saying, oh, he's trying to sell a book, and they're trying, instead of dealing with the substance of the charges, going after him personally.
Well, I'm not sure where that comes from. I mean, if you look at some of the wacky stuff that's been, talked about in the media over the last couple of days regarding some of the material in Bob Woodward's book, it's been stated flat out that, there are a couple of passages in his book that relate to some key elements of truth that are simply incorrect. And, this is not to bash away on Bob Woodward. He's a pretty good fella from what I understand. But in a book of many hundreds of pages, he's gotten a couple of things incorrect. And, nobody
what's he gotten incorrect?
To just say, okay, that's incorrect and we're not going to correct the
Scott,
record. That's insane.
Well, okay, what's he gotten incorrect?
Well, there's some sort of, like one thing we heard John Kerry talking about, instead of his military records and instead of owning up to what he told Tim Russert on Meet the Press Sunday, when he erroneously told Tim Russert that A, his military records were available, and B,
no, but what's Bob
available.
Woodward gotten incorrect?
Instead, what he did was he accused the administration.
Scott, we only got a couple minutes. I'm sorry because of the phone problems. What's Bob Woodward gotten incorrect?
Well, he apparently asserted that there was some sort of secret deal with the Saudi Arabian government regarding oil prices, and that's just totally factually incorrect.
Well, what's interesting about that is that Scott McClellan didn't deny it. They asked Press Secretary Scott McClellan about it, and he said, oh, well, Bush speaks with foreign leaders about all kinds of things. He didn't flat out deny it. Why didn't he deny it?
No, you were... I don't know what he said, but I do know what was said by other folks in the White House, and they said the discussions between the administration and Saudi Arabia and other members of the OPEC were quite simple. A, we're prepared to remove Saddam Hussein from power either through diplomacy or through military action. When this happens, we want to make sure that there's no disruption in petroleum flow or petroleum availability.
Yeah, but...
And all of a sudden, this gets trumped up into a secret deal, and, you know, Scott, I'll put it to you this way, Mark.
Okay,
if
we only got about 30 seconds.
Big,
I'm sorry.
Deal, why would the Bush-Cheney campaign be promoting Mr. Woodward's book on their website?
Well, I think the answer is because they accept that Woodward got it right. Hey, Scott, I'm sorry we have to end so quickly. Next time, we're going to try to make sure there are no phone problems. We could have gone on much longer. But
that
thanks very much for coming on the short time that you did.
You betcha.
Hey, folks, that's it for Election Tuesday. We've got a terrific show tomorrow. Coming up tomorrow is Seema Wali. She is an Afghani woman who, in fact, was very much instrumental in setting up the original government of Afghanistan. She's part of the Loya Jirga. She's going to talk about what's going on in Afghanistan today, a country that we're not focusing on at all. I expect a really terrific show. What she's going to say, I expect, is how dangerous it is right now. It's not safe, particularly for women. We used to condemn the Taliban for all the horror treatment they did of women in Afghanistan. I'm afraid we may be going back there. It's going to be a terrific show tomorrow. I apologize for the technical problems, but I very much appreciate your listening in. Please tune in tomorrow for that very special edition of The Inside Scoop.